start with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Bill Paul.
You could all stand and join me in facing the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That I'll call this meeting to order. And Jolene, do we have any guests this morning?
Yes, we do. This morning we have two guests who are here for public comment. One is Michael Coronato and Jeff Armstrong from Rancho. Others include Josh Young from Hewitt, Brad Bowers from Black and Beach, Azar Khan from Carson, and our web team.
Okay, with that, I'll ask for public comments. Please keep your comments to under 3 minutes if possible. And please address anything within our jurisdiction, not on today's agenda. First, I'll ask for Michael Coronato. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank the board for letting me speak. I have a piece of property on Career Drive in Israel Valley. And I'm taking an easement from the Lord Industrial Ranch to run a sewer line through my property to Camino Drive, which is only 240 feet to connect to their sewer system. And the state and Houston Water District and San Andreas District, the one of the homes on the east side of Camino Drive, Gets Road, three sewer systems. I had 10 people all in this immediate area of Canada Drive who wanted the sewer system, and they all backed out because of lack of money. So now I'm holding it back by myself, and I need a grant or some help from the Eastern Water District or St. Andrews or the Water District, the world I can get it, to help me complete this project. And by putting the sewer system on Canelo Drive, you can connect 71 lots to that same sewer system. And that would be a big grant to Eastern Water District to save them. And you need no pumping stations. It's all around you. So I'd like the board to talk it over and see if they can do the help.
All right. Are you currently on septic?
I own the property.
He owns part of the vacant piece of property.
Oh, it's vacant parcel.
So there's 8 homeowners and 2 empty lots that went for the sewer system. But they're all back now.
Okay. Joe, did you have something?
Sure. Mr. President, I had a chance to briefly discuss with Michael the situation. We have secured the necessary easements from Brookfield to extend the sewer laterals up to the area, the sub-area 8, where you reside in Quail Valley. I'll be more than happy to set up a meeting to discuss the details of how sewer can be extended and the necessary support from the community that we'll need.
Okay, thank you,
sir. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Next speaker is
Jeff Armstrong.
Who I met this morning.
Good morning. Jeff Armstrong, General Manager for Rancho California Waters. We have 2 public comments about this morning. The first one, I'd like to congratulate Corona on his position here on the Eastern Board. Had the pleasure of working with Steve for 16 years, and he's always passionately challenged us at the district to be more efficient and successful. And I gotta say, this change has already resulted in a good change in Steve. I've never seen him clean up so well. Congratulations.
Sort of.
For us. But the real reason we're here, the main reason is the Rancho California Waters Board of Directors has passed a resolution honoring and commending Director Record for his service as the chairman of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California for his 2 terms. And our organization, our board, and even the industry really appreciates your contributions, your dedication, the accomplishments that you had as the chairman really are legacy defining accomplishments in some very challenging times, and they mean a lot going to the state, to the region, to here locally, and to us at Rancho. We very, very much appreciate all that you have done. I won't read the resolution for the sake of time, but our board offers their sincere and genuine thanks to you for what you've done, and we really very much appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that very much. That means a lot. I don't clean up as well as Steve, but I have other good points.
I have further to go.
Can I please?
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just on a quick note, it is always nice to see Megan come to NWRA because she added a whole bunch at the leadership conference, and so we appreciate her attendance.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to speak before the board? Seeing none, we'll move right into our next item, which is election of officers. In accordance with the provisions of Section 71233 of the Municipal Water District Law of 1911, this is the time and place for conducting an election of the board president and vice president of the board of directors for the ensuing two-year period. Eastern Municipal Water District has traditionally implemented a seniority rotation of board members for the offices of president and vice president. Based upon the current rotation, Vice President Ronald Sullivan would move to the position of president, and Director Phil Pauly would move into the position of vice president. I would now like to ask the board secretary to start with the nomination and election of president.
Nominations are open for the office of president of the board of directors.
I would nominate Ron Sullivan as president of the board.
All right, thank you.
Ron Sullivan has been nominated for the office of president. Is there a motion to close the nominations and cast a vote for Director Ronald Sullivan to serve as president for 2019 and 2020?
So moved.
Second.
We need a vote on that
okay.
Vote.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
I hereby recognize a unanimous vote for Director Ronald Sullivan to serve as president for 2019 and 2020.
Thank you very much. It was a very difficult campaign. Thank you, Randy. I'll try and follow Director Record's footsteps and Director Swanson's footsteps in his chair. Okay, nominations are now open for the office of Vice President of the Board of Directors for 2019 and 2020.
Nominate Phil Pauly.
Second that.
Okay, Phil Pauly has been nominated for the office of Vice President. Is there a motion to close the nominations and to cast a vote for Director Phil Pauly to serve as Vice President?
So moved.
I move the nominations to elect Director Phil Pauly as Vice President.
Okay. Well, the motion's been... There's been a motion to... and it's been seconded to nominate and cast a vote. We need to cast a vote for Director Pauly as Vice President. We need a vote on that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Section 71340 of the California Water Code also provides that the board's ability to appoint additional officers, including but not limited to the position of treasurer. The board is currently considering long-term options for the appointment of the treasurer since the departure of Joseph Cooper. As a result, I am recommending that the district's Deputy Treasurer Charles Turner be appointed to the treasurer position on an interim basis until such time as the board takes further actions on this matter. Is there a motion for the appointment of Charles Turner as interim treasurer?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay.
Is he here today?
He wasn't sure how the vote was going to come out.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I move the appointment of Charles Turner as treasurer.
And Mr. Chair, if I can interrupt, as a housekeeping matter, we have a resolution attached as Exhibit C to the agenda item, which is a codification and ratification of the election of these directors. The resolution authorizes the election of these officers and recognizes the votes that just took place, with Director Sullivan as president, Director Pauly as vice president, and interim treasurer as Charles Turner. And I recommend passage of that resolution. And this ensures conformity with the requirements of Assembly Bill 1234.
Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Do we need a roll? No, we don't need a roll call vote for that.
Not on that so resolution, no.
Okay. All right. In accordance with California Government Code Sections 53232-1 and 53232-2, also included in our board packet is an updated document listing the board, the committee, and other assignments, which reflects the assignments approved by the board on December the 7th, 2018, with requested revisions today, as well as any today's election of president and vice president and the appointment of the treasurer. Are there any suggestions different than what is in the recommendation? Okay. Then I would hear a motion for the approval of this resolution.
I move the approval of the board, committee, and other assignments for 2019 and adoption of the resolution.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we will go to item number 3, which is recognitions.
President Sullivan, members of the board, I'm pleased to come before the board this morning to propose a proclamation of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District in recognition of David J. Slauson for his tenure and service as President of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors. Whereas Dave Slauson has served on the Board of Eastern since 1995 and has recently completed his tenure as Board President through January of 2018. Whereas during his tenure, President Slauson oversaw an agency that has been continually recognized as one of the leading water, wastewater, and recycled water agencies in both California and the United States. And whereas President Slauson's tenure on the Board included the launch of EMWD's Groundwater Reliability Plus program, which is a holistic approach to groundwater management, sustainability, and public education designed to help EMWD provide long-term groundwater resources and water quality improvements for current and future customers. And whereas President Slauson oversaw the advancement of a number of district-wide investments that will provide long-term reductions in EMWD's carbon footprint, those investments include expanding the use of clean energy fleet vehicles, investments in additional solar energy, and the transition away from the use of chlorine gas at the wastewater treatment facilities. And whereas President Slauson's direction was instrumental in helping Eastern achieve and maintain a AAA credit rating and the transition to a modernized billing methodology that will further promote water use efficiency for years to come. And whereas EMWD received the J.D. Powers and Associates Award for Customer Satisfaction after a national survey found that EMWD ranked highest among water agencies in the western United States and had highest ranking customer communications efforts and agency nationality. And whereas EMWD was also recognized for its work in recycled water and for other initiatives that have resulted in long-term sustained water use efficiency standards, Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District is appreciative of David Slauson's leadership during his tenure as President of the Board of Directors. And I'd also like to add, as General Manager, I've really enjoyed working with David over the last couple of years as he served as President. He's always been very accessible, really on top of items. And, you know, it's quite demanding sometimes that we ask a lot of the president, but he's just been fantastic and really shown great leadership and support for staff. So on behalf of staff, I'd also like to thank you, Director Slauson, for that. And with that, I just want to offer my congratulations. Thank you. We also have these parting gifts for you as president. Ooh. So, Jolene, do we want to get the
A couple of things you did not mention.
Why don't you take the microphone?
Well, during my tenure, I know all of the stuff we can just say staff is you know, excellent staff and leads the way, and all the progress we've made is substantially staff. So, but you did not mention unemployment rate is low. Gross national product has been up, and stock market. So, I'm not saying that's all my.
Thank you for those contributions. Well, thanks. We do one, and then would the entire board like to come up and
share? Sure. Awesome.
Thank you.
So if the gavel comes with it, I don't have any pains, any like a loss, so I can do loss.
As long as you don't hit anybody.
But I can't wait.
This is for me to wait to pop it out.
It's for me.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
That's a
okay, with that, we'll go to item four, which is executive reports, Bill.
Okay, thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report was included in your package. I'd like to go over a couple of things that are happening very quickly. I appreciate the board's support for the time that I was on vacation. Although you come back from vacation, you realize you have 500 emails in your inbox, and it takes quite a little effort to get back on track, but I think we're doing well here. One thing I want to report is we've been working very closely with the Savoba tribe on the upcoming opening of their resort in Casino. It is just around the corner. They are planning on a February 14th, 2019 opening. So we're looking at something that's less than a month away at this point. As a result, we've been trying to make sure that the infrastructure is in place to serve the resort and the casino. They had a very, very aggressive construction schedule. And so it was not only the facilities that we had to construct to support that, but also their contractors as well. So yesterday, Joe and his team had a great meeting with the tribe and trying to get everything tied up. To give you a kind of context, it is absolutely on the critical path. They have not completed the sewer infrastructure, which is that they have responsibility for constructing. We have completed our portion of that. So this new sewer system that needs to be completed and commissioned is on the critical path. And what we're trying to do is come up with ways that we can accommodate some of the things that we need to do right now. So, for example, they're doing testing in the kitchen and in the laundries. So we're basically going to allow them to do that. We'll be pumping from the wet well from the new lift station. And the current schedule for completion of the sewer and the intertie is the first week in February, so literally a week before the casino and resort opens. We've also been cleaning the existing force mains that are out there so we can accommodate the additional flows. And yesterday, as I mentioned, Joe met with the tribe and we coordinated those activities very closely. And the tribe has really expressed an appreciation because everything really is truly on the critical path. But I just want to commend Joe and his staff and Jeff and his staff for going out in the field and making these things happen. So if we don't hear anything at this point, everything's going to move forward successfully for the February 14th opening. Under past ongoing activities, I do want to mention we had a very productive meeting on December 19th for district management, finance staff, engineering staff, along with Director Sullivan, in a city-hosted meeting to address the dry well conditions in the eastern Menifee area. It was homeowners were invited. We had a very full house at City Hall. We gave a very comprehensive presentation regarding the groundwater conditions in the field, why some of the people's wells are not producing water, and very detailed technical. But we also talked about what the financing options were and what a plan would be going forward to provide domestic water service for those residents. So we had proposed not only the specific infrastructure that would need to be constructed, but a financing mechanism through the formation of a CFD and went through the process for that formation. We also had the opportunity for the community members to ask questions. As you can imagine, they asked a lot of questions about the CFD and how, what the cost would be, how it would be reflected on their tax bills and so forth. And then we also distributed a non-binding letter of interest and asked them to review that over the next month and then come back to a meeting that has now been scheduled for January 22nd, so just around the corner, where we'll have and see if we have a critical mass of residents that come back and want to implement the CFD and construct the infrastructure. Bear in mind there's a two-thirds vote required of the property owners out there to implement this project, and so we're hoping that's the case. If we do have strong interest at the meeting on the 22nd, we will bring something back to the board, including the cost and process associated with the formation, and then we would be seeking further actions with the homeowners to implement this. So more to come on that, but it was, I think, a very, very productive meeting that we had on the 19th to get this rolling and either resolve one way or the other. Under items of interest to the board, as a result of the great wet weather we're having, we continue to and have started up additional diversions on the Santa Central River. We've put in 230 acre feet. We have are taking diversions right now because of the rainstorm is trying to capture everything we can. Our permitted diversion amount is 5,760 acre feet from the San Jacinto River. We haven't hit that in quite a number of years, but with these rainstorms, we're certainly building up pretty quickly and early in the season. Other items of interest, as reported in the weekly report, our newly elected governor, Gavin Newsom, is really weighing in very heavily on the failing water systems issues and the water tax. He was in office just a couple of days and basically released his draft budget, which included a drinking water retail customer fee as well as a fertilizer and dairy fee, very similar to SB 623, and setting up the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund that those fees would go into. So he is proposing certainly to address this issue of the failing water systems. He's not deviating much so far from what was proposed last year in terms of the water tax. And, of course, those funds would be provided to the State Water Resources Control Board to be able to assist the failing water system. On January 11th, he took all of his cabinet members on a field trip. It was not noticed to the press. That field trip was down to the community of Ceres in Stanislaus County, which is one of these communities that has had failing and contaminated water systems for quite a while. He made several declarations to the press at that point, including that safe drinking water, affordable drinking water, is top of mind, and that his goal was to get the $130 million fee annualized, which was the projected revenue generation last year from SB 623. So obviously this is something that the new administration is going to come out of the gate with. We are going to be working with Aqua, of course, on their alternative, which is to set up a trust that would be used to be able to fund these failing water system improvements and also reintroduction of our bill, AB 2050 version 2, which we will are preparing and completing and getting ready to submit to Ledge Council. So more to come on that. If that wasn't good enough news, we also had the State Board release on January 3rd their low-income rate assistance study. As you recall, they passed AB 401, and it was signed by the governor in 2015. That bill required the State Board to look at what programs could be put in place for retail water agencies to establish low-income rate assistance and how those programs would look. So the report was just very recently released, as I said, on January 3rd. The comments are due on February 1st. Just to give you a small kind of overview of the report, it looks at, you know, program recipients, different income levels, different mechanisms for delivering the benefits to low-income households and possible funding sources. And the funding sources that have been identified in the report include, of course, a drinking water retail customer fee, or again, water tax or public good charge. But they're also looking at a drinking, quarter percent tax increase on personal income above $1 million, and interestingly, a sales tax surcharge on bottled water. That sales tax surcharge on bottled water would actually take not only a two-thirds vote of the legislature, but it would take a ballot initiative to approve that, because apparently in the 90s, water was classified like food as a non-taxable item. And so that would actually take a vote of the voters of California. So the fees and what they put as a target is a generation of $620 million a year. So if you look at that, on the failing water systems, the state's looking for $130 million. They're also looking for $620 million to do these low-income rate assistance programs. And that those would be implemented through us. So there's a lot coming down the pipeline in terms of pressure on the water community in terms of fees and charges. We are, of course, working with Aqua on this, and we'll be working with other agencies to provide comments on that. And we have been involved in the work groups that the State Board has set up since the beginning of this process and continue to do so. So we'll follow that very closely. And so with that, that concludes my report. Are there any other questions that the Board may have?
No, just yesterday in Sopa, they say that the low income is going to be five times more expensive than the sales tax.
Well, I'm sorry.
When Michael Brocadero was there yesterday, and he talked about the expense of...
Right. Yeah, he was referring to under the failing water systems water tax proposal, that would raise $130 million. And under the low-income rate assistance proposal, they're looking to raise $620 million. So that's what he's referring to.
That's correct.
Paul, on the water tax, just preparing that it may go through, is our billing system going to be capable of having a separate line item that says this is a state-mandated water tax?
Well, we would be able to put that in place.
Okay.
In our existing system, it would take quite a bit of programming and quite an expense to be able to do that. Of course, we're changing over our billing system. We have that capability. But ideally, yes, that's what we would put in. Is we would put it in the state-mandated feeder tax.
I just, if possible, I'd like to tell our customers that is not some, an action this board took, that is something that we forced to find itself.
That's a good point. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Laura, do you have anything? Nick?
Nothing.
Joe?
Mr. President, members of the board, we're pleased to announce that after an extensive recruitment process, we have selected Mr. Corey Wallace as...
He's left the room.
Oh, no.
That didn't last long.
We selected Mr.
Bruce, you might want to tell him he's being introduced. Hi, Corey.
He's just trying to convert you.
As I was saying, we're very pleased to have Corey appointed as the Director of Development Services. Corey has over 30 years of experience in the water industry, including 19 years serving EMWD in various capacities. So we're very pleased with the recruitment process, and we all welcome Corey to his new role.
Thank you. All right, with that, we'll go to item number 5, which is the consent calendar. Is there anyone wishing to pull any of the items? If not, we'll entertain a motion to approve.
Item number 5. Second.
Then move to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Agenda item 6, action calendar A, to adopt 2019 state and federal legislative priorities and policy principles. Jolene.
Good morning.
Good
morning. So before you, for consideration today, are our 2019 legislative priorities and policy principles. A brief overview, we'll be discussing the policy principle update, as well as our federal and state legislative priorities, talking about some of our priorities that are rolling over from last year, and then the legislation that will be So we're starting with the policy principles overview and update. As you're likely aware, we've been adopting these policy principles since 2004. The policy principles remain fairly consistent from year to year, and they're really founded on our mission statement, our guiding principles, and our strategic plan. The purpose of the policy principles is to provide kind of the base foundation from which we advocate on legislation and take positions. They guide our staff as well as our legislative advocates in terms of taking positions and advocating. And then, of course, it guides our messaging for outreach related to legislation. You've seen some version of this chart kind of year after year, but we do want to just provide the quick refresher that we have a number of checks and balances in place as we that we use as we advocate on bills. First, we acquire the bills and identify the bills that will have some impact on EMWD. Our legislative action team, and we have a whole team of subject area experts that review and provide our analysis on the bills. We then check in with the Board Adopted Policy Principles, take a position, we run that by Paul. From there, we share the information with our lobbyists and our association, and we conduct the outreach and advocacy. Based on how votes shake out, we conduct follow-up with all the members to either thank them for their votes or ask them if they need any other information to help them see our position. The major change in the policy principles for 2019 is about governance, in particular related to cybersecurity and critical infrastructure. There's a lot of effort trying to ensure transparency along these lines. While we support transparency, we also want to make sure that nothing jeopardizes our critical infrastructure or our sensitive customer data. The second item is storing, securing, and managing customer health and income information. As Paul mentioned, as we move into this discussion about low-income rate assistance programs, one of the ideas is that water districts would manage those. To do that, we would have to have customer income data. We do not want that information, so we'll be opposing any effort that requires us to have either health, customer health information, or income data. So moving on to our priorities. In your packet, both the legislative priorities as well as the principles are marked up in red line form, so you can see specifically in both documents what has changed between last year and this year, just for your reference and for for ease of understanding what we're changing. So for 2019, our priorities, Paul mentioned several of them in his GM report, but we do want to elevate the language to address the state funding related to the water tax and implementation of the low-income rate structure. We want to support data sharing efforts to maximize water transfers and other water management practices. The water conservation legislation that passed last year, we want to support efforts to streamline that. Currently, it looks like some of the reporting could be quite burdensome, so we'd like to see that streamlined. And then, of course, we're reiterating our commitment to co-sponsoring that legislation, AB 2050 2.0, as we're referring to it. To get into a few of the specifics, on the federal side, we're continuing to support the efforts to ensure that water conservation rebates are not considered taxable income. Currently, they are, and we would like to see that change. It's a little bit of an uphill battle, but we do think that change is the right thing to do. And then, of course, we want to continue supporting funding for zero programs like Title 16 and Water Smart. On the state side, of course, we'll continue to oppose the water tax. We will continue to encourage one-time allocation from the general fund, as well as the formation of an irrevocable trust. On the governance front, we'll continue to support reforms like what we've been proposing in our legislation. And then the last item is something that came to our attention recently. We have kind of fought the battle on the federal front to maintain the taxes and status of municipal bonds, but there's been a recent threat on the state front. The state has a vision to create an iBank, which would be an infrastructure bank for all California infrastructure, and through that process, the proponents are trying to get rid of municipal bonds. So that would be problematic for us. On the water and environmental policy side, legislation will be required to implement the Lower Colorado River Drought Contingency Plan. It's something that MET is the lead on behalf of its member agencies, but we definitely support that effort. And then on the state front, as I mentioned, sharing data to support collaboration, transfers, and other conservation measures. On the drought management and conservation framework, the real effort here, as I mentioned, is just ensuring that as we implement these conservation measures, we're effective, but that we don't get buried in the reporting requirements. Existing priorities from 2019 that are returning for, I'm sorry, from 2018 that are recurring for 2019, of course, the water fix, also funding for LAFCOs to address the consolidations that need to occur to address the failing water system issue. Continuing to oppose low-income programs that are inconsistent with conservation mandates. We've been arguing that our tiered rate structure is effectively a low-income rate structure because if you're using this just enough water to get by, it's a very low rate. Continuing local control to prioritize and develop new water supplies. Of course, funding assistance for new technologies, especially things like brine minimization. And then we will continue to oppose efforts. There's been quite a few efforts recently to characterize gray water in a similar light as recycled water and promote gray water use and installation of gray water systems. And we will continue to help draw the distinction between recycled water systems and local control on that front and gray water because they are really different products. And then Also, Paul mentioned this already, but we will continue to sponsor slash co-sponsor the legislation that we introduced last year, AB 2050. We are making several amendments to address some outstanding issues from last year, as well as contemplating a funding source to help implement the bill. And that concludes my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go to item 7B, adopt a proposed resolution to support the district's application to the State Water Resources Control Board's Groundwater Sustainability Grant. We need a vote?
Correct, because if there are legislative priorities and policy principles, they're included in your package.
I'll make the motion to accept the policy principles.
I'll second.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. 6B, adopt a proposed resolution to support the district's application to the State Water Resources Control Board's Groundwater Sustainability Grant Program for the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Prevention and Remediation Program.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. The resolution before you today requests board support of a grant application to the Division of Drinking Water under the State Water Resource Control Board. This grant would help subsidize capital costs for a multifaceted, multi-year UW capital facility program, which would involve up to 9 wells north, east, and south of the Montchair Reserve Base. The wells, piping, and treatment facility allows to capture, treat, and blend the contaminated groundwater around the Montchair Reserve Base. The resolution is a requirement of the grant funding application. Any questions, comments?
Can I just move the item, please? I mean, it's just kind of a no-brainer.
Sure, it's a no-brainer. The amount's what? Roughly $22 million.
It's the grant cost is estimated at $66 million. The grant would give us 50% subsidy or 50% grant funding, so we're requesting $33 million currently.
Terrific.
I wouldn't put that in the bank yet, but we
Just to clarify.
Yeah, right. This is an application. The resolution supporting the application.
We're going after as much as we can possibly.
I will second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
6C, approve and authorize an award of contract with Hewitt Infrastructure West Incorporated for $49,994,000 under specification number 1338W for Paris 2 desalter and additional appropriation of $57,979,500. Joe.
Mr. President, members of the board, we're very pleased to be here today to recommend water construction of the Paris 2 desalter. This is an important milestone in our overall desalination program. The program itself consists of multiple components, including the wells to extract the brackish water, the pipelines to collect and convey that well water to our treatment facilities in Sun City, and of course, the existing desalters generate approximately 8 million gallons per day. We are proposing a third desalter, a phase one of that desalter, which will produce 5.4 million gallons per day of potable water to serve our community. As a result of the treatment process, there will be brine that will be generated from the reverse osmosis treatment system. We have a connection to the Inland Park brine line, which we will utilize to dispose of that brine. Having said that, we are also, as boards of water, currently demonstrating a new technology, desalting, to see if we can reduce and recover a significant portion of that brine. And we will be looking at either leasing or purchasing additional capacity in the Orange County Sand District until such time as we either advance full-scale construction of a brine recovery system, or if that doesn't prove successful, we will purchase that additional capacity as a permanent capacity. This next slide shows a figure of our network of wells, shown in green triangles, and a network of pipelines to collect and convey the raw water from the wells to the desalination complex located off of Marietta Road. The red portions, the wells and pipelines, are those that were necessary to construct, to supply the additional water needed for the Paris to desalter. Three of the wells have been completed with support from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, including the connected pipelines. We are near completion on the fourth and final well that is necessary to supply the necessary water for the Paris desalter. This next exhibit shows the overall site plan for the proposed facility. As the board is aware, a few years back, we acquired 8 acres from the Sun City Civic Association, which allowed us to co-locate the new desalter in the existing complex. This figure shows the RO building to accommodate the treatment of the brackish water. Initially, that water from the network of wells will be conveyed to a forebay. From that forebay, the water will be pumped to the existing facilities as well as the proposed facilities. And finally, after treatment, through the reverse osmosis system, the water will go through a chlorine contact tank for disinfection, and then ultimately we'll pump that into our global distribution system. As part of the layout, we coordinated closely with the city of Menifee to accommodate the future extension of Valley Boulevard to Brea Boulevard. So the layout of the facility not only accommodates a potential future road extension, but also potentially the expansion of the Paris facility. We're currently working with the Corps to identify the long-term sustainable yield of the brackish groundwater basin with the potential to expand this new facility beyond 5.4. This rendering shows the proposed facility, as shown here. This is the RO building, and adjacent to it is a finished water wells pump station, as well as the forebay that I mentioned. And this is Valley Boulevard and Marietta Boulevard in the background. This is a rendering from the opposite side, looking towards the facility. One enhancement to our overall complex: currently, haulers of brine have to enter our existing complex to discharge that brine into the pump station well. In the new facility, those haulers will enter through the slough and park at this location and discharge the brine without having to enter either the existing facilities or the proposed facilities. We have been very successful in receiving funding to support the program. And I do want to acknowledge staff as well as General Manager Jones for positioning the district over the last several years to be able to successfully pursue and secure not only the $22.5 million in matching grant from the State Water Resource Control Board, that funding agreement has been executed, but as well as the local resource funding from the Metropolitan Water District. That agreement was executed in 2017. That agreement provides a fixed amount of subsidy of $215 for every acre foot produced over 25 years, which would equate to approximately $29.6 million of contribution from Metropolitan towards this program. The program has very specific timelines, which are going to drive the schedule for completion of this facility. In addition to the State Board, as well as Metropolitan funding, we've been very successful in working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers over the last 3 years. The authorization from the Water Resource Development Act of 2000 provided up to $25 million of federal funding. Of that $25 million, to date, we have received $16.6 million of funding, which has allowed us to incrementally advance the program, including the wells that I mentioned earlier, as well as the pipelines, as well as planning and engineering activity. The fourth well 94, is nearing construction completion and will be placed online later this year. Also recently, we were notified by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that they have allocated an additional $3.4 million for fiscal year 2019. So we're very pleased with that announcement, and we'll be working closely with the L.A. District, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, to advance additional components of the program, including pipelines. Beyond that, public affairs and governmental affairs is working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and our advocates in D.C. to secure additional $25 million of authorization on top of the existing program. So we're looking forward to not only this phase of the program, but future phases as well. I mentioned the schedule, the critical nature of completing this facility. The local resource program funding with Metropolitan was executed in June 2017. It allows for 2 years to initiate construction and then a total of 4 years to complete the facility. We have already satisfied initiation of construction by virtue of advancing construction of the wells. However, completion of the facility must be accomplished by June of 2021. The bid documents that were completed and advertised for construction specify a completion of 26 months from the notice of receipt of construction, which would put us at April of 2021. So it is a very aggressive schedule, and we will be working very closely with the contractor as well as our construction management team to make certain that we complete the facility on time. We completed the documents and design with the support of our engineer, Black Beach, and the project was advertised for construction recently. We received three bids, as shown here. The lowest responsible bidder is Hewitt Infrastructure, in the amount of $49.9 million, which was almost spot on as far as the engineer's estimate. So we're very pleased with the bid result. In fact, we do have representatives today from Hewitt, as well as representatives from our engineer, Black and Beach, and our construction management team, Parsons Engineering. So our recommendations are to award the construction contract to Cuban in the amount of $49.9 million. We also negotiated continuation of service from our engineer of record, Black and Beach, to assist us with review of submittals, responses to requests for information, change order negotiations, and other engineering support during the 2+ years of construction activity. And in addition, we will need appropriations for support tasks. So in total, we are requesting the board to appropriate $57.9 million to support the construction effort. As I mentioned, we do have the $22.5 million grant to offset those costs, as well as long-term, we have the subsidy from Metropolitan. I also wanted to take this moment to recognize staff who, over the last many years, have supported this program at multiple levels, which has allowed us to advance the program to this critical juncture. And I also wanted to acknowledge the Board of Directors for their vision in supporting this critical program that will provide long-term benefits to the district. With that, I'm happy to answer your
questions. Any questions?
Well, just a comment. I agree with you, Joe, about, I mean, this is a district-wide effort, and, you know, there are external affairs or what we do in the at the federal level and state level, it's all in here, so it's a great project. And also the relationship with Metropolitan is good. Really good project. Thank you.
Joe, I just wanted to say, first, I appreciate you being here. Anytime that the board is awarding a large contract, it's great to put some faces to it, and so thank you for being here today. With the compacted or with a critical construction schedule, if the board approves this today, when can we actually start and see real work out at the site?
So
I'm sure it was on your slide, but my eyes were.
So in discussion with Hewitt, they are tentatively scheduled to mobilize sometime in March this year. So we will see their mobilization. However, having said that, before we even mobilize on site, we're discussing with the public out there. We will have another community meeting. We've had a series of community meetings. We will have another community meeting to share with the neighbors our schedule and our plan to start construction.
Yeah, I just want to make sure with our financing partners that have parameters on our financing that this project is completed on time and on schedule. And I have no doubt that it will be, but I think periodic updates on that to the board will probably be necessary.
Absolutely. We'll do that.
Okay. With that, we'll entertain a motion to approve.
I'll move.
I move approval.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item D, approve and authorize agreement with J.R. Falag Construction Company, Incorporated, for $2,066,377 for the design, build, construction services under specification number 13505, the Pinnacle Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Airline Replacement Project, and an additional appropriation of $2,629,480.
Thank you. My name is Eric Jorgens, and I'm a senior engineer working for Rockserna, and I'm going to do this presentation this morning. The topic is the Tobacco Valley Regional Reclamation Facility Fund 2 Air Cross Line, Process Line Design Build Contract Award. The presentation includes some information on the background, the scope of the work, bid results, the schedule, and the recommendations. The earlier photograph that you see in front of you right now, North is to the left, to the right is south, and then on the diagram we have three areas that are color-coded to indicate where the secondary treatment processes are at the Temple Valley Regional Reclamation Facility. Also on this diagram you see a call-out for a type 2 air process line, and that line is the line that's the focus of the topic today. It's a critical piece of the infrastructure for the site, and it has an impact on all three treatment plants. During the plant expansion, the plant 2 air line was exposed, and we conducted an inspection of it to see what level of corrosion had occurred, and it was over 75% loss of metal in some of the areas that were exposed. During that excavation process, we stopped it because we could hear leaks of air further down in the line that were still below the grade. We're very concerned about the condition of that line, and we decided to move forward to replace that line because it's a critical piece of the infrastructure. We are proposing to deliver this as a design build project to expedite delivery, considering the need to integrate this project with the lower electrification project on the site and also maintain operation of the site. We're currently advancing the lower electrification project that is needed to comply with South Coast Air Quality Management District's Rule 1110.2. This plant 2 air line must be installed by October of this year to allow us to meet the requirements of 1110.2, and the design build delivery method was selected to allow us to meet that together. Recently, the board approved the procurement of valves, specialized valves for use for this project as well. Combined with the design build project and the pre-procurement of valves will allow us to expedite delivery of this project. Scope of work for the design build contractor includes completing the design of the project. We did a very good job on the preliminary design that was performed by KEH and Allegheny Fleming. The design build contractor will also have to complete the construction and startup and testing and provide record documents and provide a warranty for the area under construction. We went out to advertise the project to 5 general contractors. We received 2 bids on December 20th. The apparent low bidder was J.R. Collins in the amount of $2,066,077. The engineer's estimate was $1.4 million, and as a result of the difference between the engineer's estimate, the actual bid received, we performed a detailed review of the bid information. What we found was that the engineer did not include site civil work. That site civil work was added at the very end of design and was not included in their cost estimate. In addition, we saw a material cost discrepancy in amount of around $330,000. And that reflects the source of material, so the stainless steel pipe being imported or domestically obtained. The engineer's estimate assumed that imported stainless steel with no tariffs, and there's a lot of questions with regards to what impacts tariffs will have in the selection of how materials are imported. Bids received are commensurate with project requirements. The schedule for the project, we're proposing the board award now, with a notice to proceed in February and substantial completion in October of this year. Recommendations, we recommend the J.R. Font be awarded the ground builds construction services for the Type 2 airline replacement project in the amount of $2,066,377. We also recommend retaining Gannett Fleming to act as an engineer for the district during the design build process to review the work performed by the design build contractor. Administrative order of an execution by general manager or designating a standard form contract with the necessary consultants, contractors, and suppliers to complete the project. An additional appropriation of $2,629,480 to fund the project through the closeout phase, which brings the total estimated project cost to $2,755,320. I'm available to ask questions, answer questions at this point in time.
Every question is a stand.
I have no questions.
Okay.
It's not surprising this air deal, Rancho's a Santa Rosa plant, same issue with the air and leaks, and that whole area, the ground there is pretty hot, so it's not surprising that you're going to go with stainless steel. So it's
We're also going above grade, and that allows us to avoid the complications with regards to existing below grade infrastructure, sequencing of construction, and the ability to maintain that line of future.
Okay.
So when do you make the determination of whether you get it outside the country or it's U.S. built stainless steel?
That's going to be within the responsibility of the contractor. I imagine that as we proceed, that the contractor is going to source that material based on their lowest cost of supply and ability to meet the schedule, of course. And my assumption right now is that they looked at domestically obtained material for the purposes of maintaining both cost and schedule control within the process.
Good. Okay.
Redwood lasts a long time.
All right. Well, that will entertain a motion.
Probably more expensive. Move the item.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Let's take a 10-minute break.
Okay, we'll do the information items and the presentations. Beth, you have one on the water use efficiency of the Oasis.
It's over 1,100 homes out in the city of Menifee. One of the unique features about this HOA is that a lot of the front yards are served by the HOA. And so the homeowners don't have the front yards. It's all owned and controlled by the HOA. Right now they have 19 meters that are serving those front yards and about 146 acre feet of potable water that they used in 2018. Some of the projects that they've done with us in the past is a conversion to recycled water. They have about 500,000 square feet of irrigation area that they converted to recycled water use through our accelerated retrofit program. They did, the project was designed and they did some inspection, the 5 potable water meters removed, 3 recycled water meters installed, and then one of the things that they kind of approached us about is, can we do additional recycled water at the time? The challenge is that their main landscape meters also need front yard. So we've looked at it in the requirements to test and follow the regulatory requirements in those front yards to really be prohibitive both on our side and their side. You know, back those you could register, you know, hundreds of homes, they have to test it on the annual basis. We would have to do cross connection testing, and so we're really not recommending going forward with any more conversion to recycled water. They also, in addition to doing this large recycled water retrofit, have done about 54,000 square feet of turf removal. And so they have a lot of areas to say those between their houses where they went out and removed the turf, solid turf, and put in plants and on drips. And they also have done more than 21,000 rotating sprinkler nozzles to program with Eastern, and they have one of the best weather-based controller systems out there, the Tasman Switchcaller. And again, they've done all this with rebates and funding from Eastern, and so we didn't really be partner with them. And what we're really trying to do is, they're really concerned about the cost of water, especially with some of the changes that have been made. With the new tier rate, their ET conservation factor went from a 1.0 to a 0.8, and then we've also been doing a lot of cleanup on the, looking at quality control on the landscape area and the square footage associated with them, and some of that is changing on. So they came to us earlier in the year, or last year, really concerned about how that was going to impact their rate. So the first thing that they were concerned about is they had about 2 million square feet associated with those accounts that are still being built in a potable system. One of the challenges is that when they did that recycled conversion, some of that square footage got converted to recycled water and it was never available in the building system. We also, again, have been, just as kind of our QC process, going through all of our dedicated landscape meters and have been checking the information that we got back when we implemented the tier grades back in 2009 and looking at that with all side-by customers or the developer at the time, doing a double step and quality control on that. What we found is that they're closer to 1.5 million square feet using the 2018 imagery. Oasis, again, a lot of that was because of the conversion of turf that had never been taken out. Oasis was concerned about the accuracy of that information, and sometimes the aerial imagery doesn't account for slopes quite enough. And so what we actually did is coordinate with them to have somebody go on site last week. We used a contractor that we used for our water use efficiency program called Blue Dot Watchdog, and they went out and hand measured all 19 of those sites. And so the HOA, we actually met with them yesterday, they are much more comfortable with that approach. It bumps up their numbers about 7%, not a whole lot. and they seem to be a lot more comfortable with using those numbers. And so we're going to move forward with getting their bills changed, adjusted to that lower number. Again, it's still going to be quite an impact going from over 2 million to, you know, again, it's still around about 1.5 million. So one of the things that we've done, again, they're very interested in doing water use efficiency. They've got a lot of the devices out there. One of our challenges is that I think with their last landscaper, is they're not really using the devices probably to the highest performance capability that they have. And this is especially true with their Calvin's controllers. Right now they're manually programming their Calvin's controllers instead of using the weather capability of those controllers. And it's really one of the challenges they're having that, you know, they keep trying to schedule based on historical ET when we know the weather changes, you know, month to month, day to day, and you have to be kind of accounting for that when you do your scheduling for your controllers. So what we're proposing to do for them is to take 5-year accounts, and it's going to be their accounts that are most over budget. They're going into Tier 3 and Tier 4, and we're going to put them on a pilot program, and we're going to work with their landscaper, with their board, and say, okay, we're going to activate those calcium controllers, and that ET requirement is with those calcium controllers. We're going to, you know, look over your system, see if there's anything that needs to be corrected or changed or repaired, and we're going to work with you to see if we can get that instead of adjusting your budget, let's adjust your water use so that you're staying within the budget. And so they're really open to doing that, and they're excited about that, and we are as well. So like I told them, what we want to do is make sure that they're being efficient, not penalize it for, you know, if there's something wrong with the budget, but really hold them to a level of efficiency that's reasonable. And so we're doing that with those 5-year irrigation meters. What we're going to do is from March to October water use, we're going to waive any fees that go into this Tier 3 or Tier 4 levels. We're going to charge that back at the Tier 2 level as long as they're doing what we ask them to for water use efficiency. So it's a win for them. It's a win for us. They're going to be paying less for water, and we're going to be seeing that efficiency out there too. And, you know, Calvin's is on board. They're excited to see this happen as well. So we're going to implement that, move forward with implementing that pilot program, and hopefully get them more efficient with their water management. And again, it's something that if it works well here, it's something we can use with other customers that we have the same sort of problem for. We've looked at all the details. Your budget's right. You know, you have the tools you need. What can we help you really get into compliance with the water budget? So I have today. Any questions on that?
No, I think that's terrific. It sounds like that's going to satisfy at least some of their concerns. You know, I think the other concern that they had was, you know, we had basically a rate increase for potable water, and see if that still, if their use still fell within that 3% increase, whatever that was. Because, you know, they can still overwater every one of those yards, and you don't see, you know, I drive over there every once in a while to see friends, and you don't see any yard with even the slightest shade of brown.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think some of that water, you know, they could do their own testing on occasion. They can take a moisture meter around when it gets to April and just do some of their own checks, because they could cut it back.
Yeah. And using the calcium controllers should really help them with that. They seem to be really struggling with the fact that the water use varies with the weather, that you need to change what you're watering with the weather. They also have a brand new landscaper in there. We met with them again yesterday. I introduced Juan Gonzalez on our staff. You know, he's done a great job working with Oasis. And so they don't think that there's going to be any problem with getting them under budget. They're not quite sure why they're over budget. So, you know, part of it might be that everything's really bright and green, and you know, sometimes the easiest thing to do is turn up the water, and that's not always the most cost effective. And looking at their cost increase, a lot of their cost increase is because we have tightened the budget down by 20%, and we are tightening
their square footage so it's more accurate, and they are exceeding that budget. And so they're paying tens of thousands of dollars in Tier 3 and Tier 4. So where we're seeing that big impact financially, and they're seeing the big impact financially, is in those top tier charges. And so if we can get them out of those top tiers and staying within their budget, I think it will be a lot easier for them to manage that.
Great.
I think another thing to point out is, first, we're very fortunate that they do have very good irrigation equipment and controllers. They have this CalSense system, which they were not fully utilizing.
Right.
So there's not going to be a big investment necessary for them to come into compliance with the budgets. And so I think that combined with the fact that the Homeowner Association is very willing to do this partnership with us, where we look at these five highest accounts and we kind of focus on those and work to get the controller. And then I think we can demonstrate that it is possible to be within the budget and that they can apply that more widely. So I think we've turned a little bit of an adversarial relationship to now they're willing to partner on this. And I think they do, through some education, kind of understand how the system works, how the allocations work, what they're doing, what they're not doing, and are at least willing to partner on a going forward basis.
Well, they've always been an advocate here. I mean,
yes.
they're not adversaries. They're asking some questions, looking for some help, and I think you guys have done a terrific job.
Yeah, I would echo that. Elizabeth and I, we had an opportunity to meet with their general manager, one of their board members, just before the holidays, and kind of walk through their concerns and what we can do to support them. And they were very excited about moving forward this pilot program, and they acknowledged that they think that their old contractor was really struggling and having a hard time understanding what they needed to do to irrigate within budget. So they're really excited about moving forward with this, and I think Elizabeth's doing a really good job in coordinating with them and their new contractor. So I think we're all hopeful that they're going to get to where they need to be.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll take up agenda item 8, which is receive and file. We have a motion.
So moved.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 9, which is the calendar review.
To gauge interest in attending. We have regrets from Director Slauson and Foley so far.
Still trying to determine if that'll work. We can use some things around. I'd really like to attend.
Okay. Which one is that?
January 2nd.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to see if I can rearrange one of mine.
Thank you.
At this point, I'm a maybe.
Okay, thank you. I'm working below the counter. On February 27th through March 1st, the Urban Water Institute will be holding its Spring Water Conference in Palm Springs. That's a Wednesday through Friday. And the agenda is attached. On March 6th, AQUA will be holding its Legislative Symposium in Sacramento from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And that is an ENWD board day, just so you're aware. Moving to page 2, I have the board's master calendar for the next 3 weeks. The board executive committee will meet tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. That's Director Slauson and Sullivan. The Delta Conveyance Finance Authority executive committee and board meetings are scheduled in Sacramento for tomorrow at 10 a.m. for Director Record. The joint meeting with Western is scheduled for 3:30 tomorrow here at Eastern. Directors Slauson and Sullivan. On Tuesday, January 22nd, the Met committee meetings will be held in LA, Director Record. And on Tuesday, January 22nd as well, we have the Rural Met Big Groundwater Conditions Overview with residents for Director Sullivan. That's at 1:30 p.m. On Wednesday, January 23rd, Director Sullivan has an update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. in Paris.
Southern California Leadership Council quarterly meeting is scheduled for January 23rd.
Chairwoman Gray will be handling that now. So.
Okay, I'll revoke that from your comment.
Time being anyway.
Thank you. Thursday, January 24th, the Menifee Mayor Stakeholder Roundtable will be held at 8:30 a.m. Director Sullivan will attend. And also for Director Sullivan, on the 24th, the OWOW Steering Committee meeting will be held at 11 a.m. at Sopma.
No, I won't be the chair, so I won't even be on the OWOW Steering Committee.
Okay.
So, you know, on occasion, I will probably go. But it's not mandatory,
okay,
because I will not be the convener or the other SAPA rep. We're doing a rotation.
Okay, so you're not planning to attend the 24th.
10 years was enough.
Thank you. I'll check with you on those going forward.
Okay.
On January 24th, the Board Option Engineering Committee meeting will be held at 3:30 p.m. Director Sullivan and Sloffman. Friday, January 25th, the Southern California Water Coalition has its quarterly luncheon scheduled in Irvine. Director Polly will attend.
Correct.
Thank you. Monday, January 28th, Director Slauson has an update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. in Moreno Valley. On Tuesday, January 29th, as I mentioned, the State Legislative Meeting in Sacramento. Thursday, January 31st, Director Polly has a monthly update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. And the BIA's Inland Empire Economic Forecast event is scheduled in Riverside at 1 p.m. on the 31st. Directors Polly and Sullivan will be attending along with General Manager Jones and Deputy General Manager Nomura. That's at 1 p.m. Monday, February 4th, Director Polly has an update meeting with the Deputy General Manager Nomura at 7:30 a.m. in Beston, Paris. The WRCOG Executive Committee will meet on Monday, February 4th at 2 p.m. And the SAPA Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, February 5th at 9:30 a.m. at Sullivan. Wednesday, February 5th, EMWD will be hosting the Menifee Chamber of Commerce's wake-up meeting here at the district at 8 a.m. Director Sullivan will attend. And February 6th through the 8th, Director Polly will be attending the County South Executive Committee meeting and conference. Moving to page 3, we have some reminders for upcoming events and for its RSVP for these events. Please let me know if you have any changes to your availability as listed. The upcoming board meetings are listed, and for February 6th, as I mentioned, Director Polly will be absent, and General Manager Jones will be in Sacramento that day as well. The board committee meetings for January are listed. Moving to page 5, I'd like to note for February 5th, that's a reschedule for the admin committee meeting. It was originally scheduled for the 7th, but it is now scheduled for Tuesday, February 5th at 4 p.m. Joint interagency meetings and the holiday schedule are listed. If there are no questions, I'll ask them to complete the final part.
Okay. Anybody have any questions? Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll go to the attendance reports for the directors. Director Perona.
Okay. I went to two Rancho Water meetings. The first on January 3rd was a special meeting to appoint a replacement board member for Ben Drake's spot. Probably have already heard that former general manager of Western, John Rossi, was chosen. And he'll do a couple of years and then he'll run for election. They had some very good candidates for that position, including former Rancho board member Jack Hoagland and Scott McIntyre, both of whom were on the board before. Kenny Ray was a board member on the school board for many years, but in the end, experience counts. So they took John, a very good choice. And on the 10th, there really was only one item on the agenda, and the it regarded how Rancho would handle the naming of district facilities. There was a bit of a controversy back at the December meeting when there was a proposal to rename Vail Dam after Ben Drake. It created a big stir, and the Vail family got involved, and the Historical Society got involved, so they decided at that time not to change the name of the dam, and in the end they chose not to even change the policy. So, but I'm sure that they're going to come up with something for Ben, more in like, you know, with his work in the wine country, and something that everyone can see and appreciate for all the work that he did there. And that's my report.
Okay. Director Pauley.
Yes, I attended the Winchester MAC meeting where I gave an update on the rehab of the lift station on Olive Avenue. I guess we're putting some odor controls in as more development starts to develop around there. And whoever did my talking points for that, give them kudos, Joe. It was spot on and made me look real smart to the group. So anyway, I appreciate that.
Okay, direct the record.
So the Joint Inland Orange County Caucus review of the agenda, always helpful, good meetings, standing committee and board meetings. January 7th and 8th, it was kind of nice being at the other end of the committee table. Back up in the cheap seats with Galliano. I think they may separate us at some point. The installment of Cheryl McGray was pretty amazing. And it's really obvious that she's very well connected, and I'm really excited about what she brings to that position right now, because it's just really hard to turn down a meeting with Gloria, and it was pretty easy with me. So, and Gloria's been great. She's working very closely together, and so she wants me involved. And so I think I think it's good. So anyway, it was good meetings.
Okay, your EMWD meeting, update with the general manager. That's okay, we'll skip that, we know that you did. So. Director Slauson.
Sorry, I didn't see that. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Usually that's been very memorable.
Yeah. Okay, Director Slauson.
All right, I had the... attended the WRCOG Executive Committee meeting. Executive Officer Rick Bishop gave an review of the year, and a TUMP program update, PACE program update. And then South Coast Air Quality Management District staff provided a report on a legislative proposal to authorize a potential local sales tax increase ballot measure for the South Coast Air District. And emphasize that South Coast HQMD's regulatory authority over mobile source emissions, which are the primary source of the ozone pollutants. Proposed tax would be used to provide an incentive for mobile source fleets to update to more fuel-efficient, lower-polluting vehicles. So that was significant. And I attended the Riverside Community College District Foundation Scholarship Committee meeting on the 15th, and we discussed our roles and responsibilities for the coming year. And I do have another RCCDF board meeting on January 22nd at 8:30. That's it.
Okay, for myself, I did attend the groundwater wells overview with all the residents out in the rural area of Menifee. It was a
I thought it was a great meeting. Paul and the staff did an outstanding job, both Joe and Charles Turner. I got a lot of kudos from the city manager on how professional and well organized it was. NWRA's leadership forum I thought was very productive. It concentrated more on what we're not going to do because of the way things shape up in the federal conference between the House and the Senate. And so there's a couple of things that we will move forward with, primarily water supply for the West. Yesterday's meeting for SAPA was, I thought it was enlightening on, because they had Michael Brocadero and Beth Alasso to give us what's going on in the state. It was kind of eye-opening what's going to happen. You know, we're just going to, I guess we're going to sit back and figure out what we can do. Not a whole lot else going on up there. I think it'll be productive when EMWD goes up on the 29th to meet some of these folks. So I learned a lot yesterday from Michael's presentation and a lot of questions from some of the other commissioners. We did welcome two new commissioners, one Brenda Dunstead from Western, and her alternate will be Mr. Stockton, and T. Milford Harrison from San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District will be the commissioner. I've known T. Milford for 40 years, pretty much. And he kind of laughed because he said, yeah, I was going to meet Randy Record just to let him know that his dad was the one that fired me as the commissioner. And I said, yeah, it was about 2 years later that I took, I think, probably was one of his spots, whatever. So it was
where would that meeting take place?
So anyway, it was way back when Clayton Record defeated Mr. Davis, and Harrison was Mr. Davis's planning commissioner. So at the end of his term, he didn't renew it. So we had a lot of laughs. But anyway, it will be a welcome. It'll be a welcome thing at SAPA to have Milford there. He's very well engaged in San Bernardino, and in June will remain as the alternate. And we did go through just a brief overview of the budget and some of the things that we're going to be doing with the Department of Water Resources, depending on what Orange County wants to do with their maybe trying to exit the IRWM procedures from SAPA and do their own. So it'll be interesting. They'll have a stakeholder meeting here at the end of the month. So other than that, that was it.
Can I add to my Met report? Sure. Been informed that Inland Empire has replaced Michael Camacho as their Met representative with Jasmine Hall.
Okay.
Not unexpected.
No, not unexpected. So actually SAPA will have a new representative from IEUA at our next meeting. Probably will be Katie. I can't remember Katie's last name, but we'll see. Depending on her time commitment also, but she came very engaged in the last three meetings at SAPA. Okay. Steve, we have a reason for closed session.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Minor versus Seven Hills.
Okay.
No, he's not an engineer. No, I have part of it.
we have anything to report out of closed session?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss the matter of Minor versus Seven Hills Homeowners Association. Instruction was given to counsel. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, do we have any director comments for future agenda items from commissioners or from the board? If not, we'll adjourn to February 6th at 9 a.m.